Ladies and gentlemen, good evening and welcome to JSW Steel Limited Q4 FY26 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will remain in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. With this, I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ashwin Bajaj, Group Head of Investor Relations. Thank you, and over to you.
Thank you, Operator. Very good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to JSW Steel's earnings call for Q4 and financial year 2026. We have with us today the management team represented by Mr. Jayant Acharya, Joint MD and CEO, Mr. G.S. Rathore, Chief Operating Officer, Mr. Arun Maheshwari, Director of Commercial and Marketing, and Mr. Swayam Saurabh, the CFO. We'll start with opening remarks by Mr. Acharya and then open the floor to Q&A. With that, over to you, Mr. Acharya.
Yeah, thank you, Ashwin. Good evening, everyone. FY26 was a transformational year for JSW Steel, marked by strategic joint ventures with global steel majors, progress on steelmaking and downstream capacity expansions, enhanced raw material security, and significant balance sheet deleveraging. In December 2025, we took a very important strategic step of advancing our long-standing partnership with JFE Steel of Japan. We announced a 50/50 joint venture with them for our BPSL steel business. The transaction has progressed as scheduled, with the JV entity being formed by end of March, and JFE has brought in the first tranche of their equity investment into the joint venture. This transaction entails a deleveraging of approximately 37,000 crores for JSW Steel, out of which about 30,000 crores has been completed at March end. JSW Steel's balance sheet has transformed with operational improvements. Our leverage has fallen to 1.81 as on 31st March, and net debt stands at 54,000 crores. Our credit rating outlook has seen an uplift, and we expect to see continued progress on this front. As you are aware, we had also been working on a joint venture with POSCO, South Korea. Last month, we have signed a joint venture agreement with POSCO at this India-South Korea summit in New Delhi to set up a greenfield integrated steel plant of 6 million tons in Odisha. This transformation has set the foundation for our next phase of growth. India's continued strong growth in steel demand and our strong balance sheet has enabled us to accelerate the growth plans. We have been targeting a capacity of 50 million tons, as we have been communicating in India, by FY31. We are now announcing a target of 62 million tons by FY32, which can be achieved through our existing sites. In addition to this, the joint ventures of JFE and POSCO will have a cumulative capacity of 16 million tons by FY32, taking the total capacity in India along with joint ventures to 78 million tons. Including our Ohio capacity of 1.5 million, the capacity would be close to 80 million tons for JSW Steel and the joint venture entities put together. Interestingly, if we just look at the ranking of steel productions, U.S. at number three and Japan at number four as a country produce about 80 million tons. So this capacity would bring us to be one of the largest steel-producing companies worldwide. During the year, we have announced an acquisition of BMM Ispat in Karnataka, a 0.9 million ton producer of long products, which would complement our product basket of long products. BMM is located at close proximity of about 50 km from our Vijayanagar steel plant. It has land available with expansion potential of 0.9 million ton to be expanded to 1.8 million ton at low specific investment cost. The expansions would focus on engineering specialized steel, and this acquisition is expected to be completed by end of this financial year. Our expansions in 1 million ton in Kadapa and the first phase of 5 million ton at JSW Utkal, which we announced last year, are progressing on track. We are announcing a further 5 million ton expansion at Vijayanagar, which will take the Vijayanagar steel plant capacity to 25 million tons, making it the world's largest single location steel plant. Our growth strategy also focuses on value-added products, and during the year, we have announced several downstream projects across our various sites in order to maintain our share of VSP over 50%. We have also taken big strides to enhance our raw material security. We have completed the acquisition of MDR high-grade coking coal mines in Mozambique. We have increased our effective interest in Illawarra coking coal mine from 20 to 30%. On the iron ore side, we have operationalized one new mine in Goa, and we have one additional mine in Goa in the last few days. We had previously stated our target of achieving a 50% captive iron ore integration and 25% captive coking coal by FY31 at a 50 million steel capacity. With the MDR acquisition, we now expect to be 50% captive for both coking coal and iron ore by FY31. We would also target going forward to enhance our captive to meet the 50% share at 62 million tons capacity as well. So thus, the last year has truly been transformational. In slide 8 of our presentation, you will see that over the next decade, India will be the key steel market globally. China's steel production and consumption as a share of global demand peaked out around 2020 and is expected to see a gradual decline. Other markets will witness muted growth. India is going through a nation-building phase, with steel being a key building block for growth. This creates a long runway for steel demand to outpace the real GDP growth in the country. India, as the second steel producer and consumer, will continue to increase its share of global steel consumption from about 9% currently to 16% in a decade. We believe production growth is likely to lag consumption growth. JSW's strengths and capabilities, including human capital, digitalization, and AI, gives us the confidence to grow steadily to meet this Indian opportunity. At the same time, we will stay prudent and focused on creating shareholder value as we have done historically in the past. On the macroeconomic front, the global economic growth outlook remains resilient, with IMF forecasting global growth in 2026 at 3.1% and the outlook for 2027 at 3.2%. This is despite the world economy facing elevated uncertainty driven by geopolitical events, particularly in the Middle East, which is causing supply disruptions, inflationary risks, increasing the pressure on interest rates. IMF, however, has flagged that prolonged continuation of this conflict could result in an impact on the GDP. Even as global uncertainties persist, India continues to grow, to show strong growth momentum. The forecast by RBI for FY27 is 6.9%, reflects the strength of domestic fundamentals, with Indian growth demand remaining robust. India has shown resilience in sustaining growth and geopolitical shocks. Such shocks are increasingly becoming the new normal. Economic activity in India has picked up in the second half of the year, supported by GST-led reforms. Healthy rural indicators, strong credit growth, improving capacity utilization and traction across key sectors continue to support the outlook. At the same time, risks such as energy price volatility and monsoon-related uncertainties needs to be monitored. India's steel consumption also grew at a healthy rate of 7.9% in FY26 due to a large flow of imports in the past 2 years. We have been a net importer. With the imposition of safeguard duty last year, steel imports have declined and exports have risen, making India a net exporter after 2 years. Looking ahead, domestic steel demand is expected to grow at a healthy rate of 7 to 9% in FY27, incrementally adding 12 to 14 million tons of demand. In China, steel production was down 4.6% in quarter one, outpacing the 4.2% decline in consumption. With production easing and export licensing norms coming into play from January beginning, steel exports, including semis, fell by 8.1% YOY. Looking ahead, a better demand-supply balance is expected as China's steel demand is projected to contract at a slower pace than what we have seen in the previous year. JSW Steel's growth continues to be firmly India-centric, reflecting our long-term conviction in India's growth trajectory. Steel is the building block for growth across manufacturing, infrastructure, engineering, energy and mobility. A strong domestic ecosystem directly contributes to self-reliance while also creating an opportunity to build further resilience and self-reliance in the country. Our growth strategy continues to focus on disciplined capital allocation, efficient execution, technology and digitalization to create sustainable value for all stakeholders. On sustainability, we were included in the S&P Global Sustainability Yearbook, earned the top 1% emblem globally across industries, and were ranked number one in the global steel sector. We have commissioned 1 gigawatt of renewable capacity with a total 2.5 gigawatt approved by our board, along with 320 megawatt of battery storage. We also deployed India's first electric locomotive for captive logistics at Vijayanagar. On the update of our projects, just to give you a brief overview, at Vijayanagar, the BF3 expansion from 3 to 4.5 million is currently under testing and commissioning. The ramp-up is expected to add incremental volumes from Q2 onwards. At Dolvi, the phase 3 expansion from 10 to 15 million ton is moving ahead as planned, with civil work equipment erection underway and targeted for completion by September 27. At JSW Utkal in Orissa, the 2 pellet plants will be commissioned by FY28. The first phase of 5 million steel capacity will be commissioned by FY30. The 30 million ton slurry pipeline in Orissa is progressing well and is expected to be commissioned by FY27. The 1 million ton structural mill at Kadapa is progressing with equipment ordering underway and commission targeting by FY29. We are adding about 3 million tons of value-added capacities while we grow our steel capacities across galvanized, electrical steel, tin plate, cold rolling, structural products, etc. And these projects are progressing well and will be commissioned between FY28 and 29. In addition, let me give you a little bit of an update on the raw material side. On iron ore, we have 25 iron ore mines, out of which 13 are currently operational. We are working on operationalizing the remaining mines, as well as increasing the EC capacity of some of the operating ones. In Goa, we expect to operationalize 2 more mines in quarter 1 of FY28, by quarter 1 of FY28. As we increase our captive iron ore production, we are geographically optimizing our sourcing, thus reducing our logistics cost and lead times. The 2 million ton iron ore mine at Netrabandha, which is now with the joint venture, is now part of the, is being commissioned in the quarter four, increasing the iron ore availability for the joint venture. On the coking coal front, as we mentioned earlier, Mozambique has the potential to yield 250 million tons of usable high quality coking coal. The mine will be developed in phases, and the first phase is targeted to be completed by mid-calendar year 2008, producing around 5 million tons of usable coking coal. In addition to the 30% stake in Illawarra, we have 3 mines and coal linkages in India, which together will provide around 5.5 million tons of coking coal. Along with MDR, we will have approximately 10 million tons of captive coking coal, meeting around 50% of our total coking coal requirement by FY31. Coming to our operating performance, quarter four was characterized by strong volume growth and operational performance supported by efficient asset utilization and increased plant reliability due to digitalization efforts across our sites. This was reflected in the higher capacity utilization for the Indian operations, which stood at 96%, excluding the BF3 shutdown. The downstream capacity utilization also increased in quarter 4 to 95%, that provided us higher VASP volumes. Steel sales stood at around 8 million tons for quarter 4 and around 30 million tons for FY26, driven by improved domestic sales, supported by growing steel demand in India. Our geographic and sectoral mix has improved. Automotive, packaging, alloy engineering sectors have increased. Also, branded sales constituted about 50% of our total retail sales, enhancing the overall value of the volumes. During the quarter, we reduced inventory by 700,000 tons and approximately 100,000 tons over the full year. We achieved 99% of our production guidance and 102% of our sales volume guidance for the year. Coming to the financial results, our consolidated revenues in quarter four crossed 51,100 crores, crossing 50,000 crores for the first time. Adjusted EBITDA stood at 9,713 crores with an EBITDA margin of 19%, while PAT stood at 19,243 crores. It is important to note that there was an exceptional gain of 17,888 crores in quarter four. This includes a gain of 18,051 crores on slump sale of BPSL steel undertaking and 163 crores exceptional charge on implementation of new labor code. The normalized PAT, excluding exceptionals for the quarter, was 3,475 crores. In FY26, the adjusted EBITDA stood at 32,048 crores and the normalized PAT, excluding exceptionals, was 8,700 crores. We transited from quarter three with one of the lowest steel prices, which has improved gradually post the imposition of safeguard duty and strengthened through March. Some part of this price recovery will be realized in quarter one, FY27. On the cost side, we were impacted by higher coking coal prices, which increased by about $16 per ton. Iron ore costs were flattish during the quarter, with one-third of captive iron ore usage in the quarter FY26. At our overseas operation, Q4 performance was better at the Platen pipe mill in Texas. However, the Ohio operations production was impacted as activities ramped up in January 26, following the caster upgrades and extreme cold weather. Overall, for FY26, the performance of U.S. operations improved significantly, reporting a EBITDA positive of $36 million compared to an EBITDA loss of $35 million in the previous year. The Italian operations also performed well in FY26, reporting an EBITDA of 16.4 million euros versus close to 15 million euros in the previous year. The BPSL transaction has driven a structural deleveraging and transformed our balance sheet. Our net debt has declined and stood at 54,000 crores by the year end. Our revenue acceptances stood at $2.1 billion. Leverage and gearing have dropped substantially to 1.81 and 0.51 respectively. The second tranche of equity investment in JFE is expected by end June, which will drive further deleveraging of 7,900 crores approximately. We have also revised our stated maximum cap for gearing from 1.75 to 1.25 and leverage from 3.75 to 3. However, our comfort level will be to keep the leverage below 2.5. During the quarter, we incurred capex of 4,612 crores and 15,600 crores for FY26. The capex for our approved growth plan is 126,000 crores, which will be spent over the next 4 to 5 years. We expect to spend about 22 to 24,000 crores in FY27. The JSW online platform, in which we have about 61% equity stake on a fully diluted basis, continued to see strong momentum during the year. In quarter four, it turned profitable for the first time. The steel volumes grew by 50% YOY, and the GMV reached 6,200 crores, a 57% YOY increase. Over 2,000 crores of this GMB was driven by JSW1's credit offerings. Looking ahead, we expect our coking coal cost to be higher by $12 to $15 in quarter one. And for FY27, we expect consolidated steel production at 29.75 million ton and a sale of 28.6 million ton. This includes volumes from BMM Ispat, which is being acquired by us, but excludes volume from our JFE joint venture. We expect the domestic steel demand to grow in the range of 7-9% in FY27, and JSW Steel is well positioned to support this growth. We'll be happy to take questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question and to restrict to two questions at a time. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We'll take a first question from the line of Vibhav Zutshi from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thanks for the opportunity and congratulations on the strong results. The first question is basically on the raw material security, given, you know, the target of 78 million tons. Starting with iron ore, maybe, while you said the captive mix would be 50%, we have seen, you know, some of the global iron ore majors ramping up iron ore exports to JSW Steel. So how confident are we in ramping up in a captive mix from one-third currently to 50%? And how could be the mix for imports versus domestic sourcing? So just to provide some guidance on that, please.
Hi. I'll answer that. I'm Arun Maheshwari. Regarding this security of iron ore up to 50% for the captive from the captive sources, we have a 50% EC capacity available for the iron ore within India for our own consumption. Depending upon the logistics ratios, depending upon the proximity, depending upon the other sources available at that particular point of time, we define to use how much we should be taking out from the captive. So that's how we decided to take only up to one-third of our consumption last year from our captive sources, even though the ECs were available up to 50% of our own consumption. So this is how we try to maximize our logistical advantages at different geographies, because we are located in almost all the geography of India. So going forward also, we are continued to participate in the assets of iron ore within India. Recently, we have acquired some more in Goa. We continue to look for something more in South. We are participating in Andhra Pradesh, wherein we have secured some concessions. Those are exploration licenses, wherein we are doing more exploration. So today we have 13 operational mines and about 12 is under exploration. So we will continue to, keep on upgrading our captive sources available. And we are confident that at 62 million ton of JSW's volume, we will have our targeted volumes of captive sourcing.
Yeah. So our total number of mines, as we mentioned, was 25 with total combined resources of about 1.7 billion tons without the mines which are under exploration right now. So those will add to the resources.
Okay, got it. That's helpful. And the second question is on the Middle East conflict. So, you know, we have been seeing that there is a reduction in commercial LPG supplies and some shortages in natural gas as well. So do you see any risk to the volume guidance if the conflict continues, or, you know, those issues are largely resolved in the guidance that you provided?
Yes, LPG and the gas supplies, LNG, has been a recently cause of concern because of the Middle East disruption. But our exposure to the gas linked production is very limited in the overall production. However, it does have an impact on the cost of production. However, we have ensured and we continue to ensure that there won't be any production disruption by virtue of non-availability of gas, unless it becomes too severe in coming months. Mm. Otherwise, our portion to the gas-linked steel production is very, very less.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Very helpful. I'll come back to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the line of Amit Dixit from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good evening, sir, and congratulations for a good performance. A couple of questions from my side. The first one is on realization. Now, given that realizations have gone up and spot realizations have gone up much higher in last quarter, what kind of realization increase do we expect? In Q1, if you consider that, you know, the prices are remain at the current level, I mean, considering the contracts that you might have and other things?
Amit, you're right. Since the increases have happened between January to March gradually, part of the increase is reflected in our quarter four numbers, and the balance increase will be reflected in quarter one. In the quarter four, our NSR has moved up by about 3,800 rupees per ton, and we would see the balance of the price increase play out in quarter one.
Sir, possible to quantify the balance?
So, difficult to give a number because it will depend on, again, the product mix, you know. So, and it will also take into account a seasonal number. But I think we expect that after covering the cost, because the cost also will go up. My senses or our senses are the cost will go up in the range of 3,000 rupees or so per ton. But the margins will still be positive after covering the cost. So the price will cover the cost and add to the margin.
Great, sir. Understood. The second one is essentially on the expansions that we have announced. Now, most of our expansions are flat focused. And, you know, in the country, traditionally we have seen long demand outpacing flats. So any thoughts around longs expansion as well? I know you've mentioned one of the acquisitions that you have done. But apart from that, are we planning to get active in longs as far as downstream expansion is concerned?
So in the last announcements, if you recall, we have announced that the Kadapa section mill, which is a structural mill which would go for beams, and the expansion at our Raigarh facility, which would have beam and rails. So those will be in long products. In the BMM facility, which we have approved at the board for acquisition, which is a 1 million ton long facility, would be expanded to about 1.8 million ton. And that would also be in special engineering steel product. So, yeah, these would add to the long product capacities which we currently have. We believe that, India, with the infrastructure growth, would require long products, and these would help in meeting those demands.
Okay, fair enough. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Amit Murarka from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening and thanks for the opportunity. So, just wanted to understand the thought on growth going ahead. Like earlier in the past, we've seen that usually you have taken one project at a time. So, given that now you are indicating taking a multiple projects, so is it now the new normal, like, or should we like look at the business now as three balance sheets, like one standalone, one JFE JV, and one POSCO JV for all your growth programs going ahead?
From JSW Steel's perspective, if you see the slide which we have already given to you, that by FY30, JSW Steel alone will be at 49 million tons approximately. Can I see that slide? 49 million ton, and on top of that, we would have the joint venture of JSW JFE, and including Ohio, will be close to 55 million tons by FY30. The expansion of JSW Steel alone in up to FY32 would be to 62 million. So what you would track for JSW Steel will be the 62 million tons. On top of this, we have 10 million tons as we expect from the joint venture with JFE in the existing site, and a 6 million ton new facility at POSCO. Those would be tracked again separately.
And once Dolvi gets completed, we will have two sites, Paradeep and Chennai, instead of one site normally.
Yeah. And Mr. Rathore is just adding that stat.
Yeah, so like the Dolvi will get over in another 1 year or so. Then we will start, this year we'll start Paradeep and Vijayanagar. So we'll have two sites instead of one site, each 5 million. So,
yeah,
that's the target we are taking.
No, my question was more longer term. So what I was trying to understand is, like, usually in the past you have taken one project at a time and then moved ahead. So is this now a new normal that you'll be taking up multiple projects through the JV structure that is in place now?
Yeah, so as we had given you an indication earlier that the idea of the JV was to strategically grow faster in the country while it helped us to deleverage as well. So we'll have a double engine of growth, one which JSW Steel will grow on and the other which the joint venture will grow on. We have also, we have given you an indication that India is the fastest growing market. And this is the right time to be able to take this opportunity and grow faster. That's the idea. And we would therefore, to your answer is yes, we would be expanding faster along with the joint ventures.
Right. And given the pace of growth is going to be so high, is there a plan to also kind of export larger part of these volumes than what we are doing currently then?
No. Can you just repeat that once? Sorry, I missed that.
Given that the pace of growth at a JSW, including JV level, is going to be quite accelerated with like multiple capacities being done, so is there also a plan to essentially raise exports to a much higher percentage than what it is today in the current portfolio?
We don't see the need as of now. The way it is structured, I think you will see probably more of domestic alignment. It's possible that when the capacities incrementally maybe come up in the first 1 year or 2 years, you have a slightly higher export, but then come down. Having said that, but I would like to say that our Paradip facility, which is on the port, would be the natural place to export from. So the exports from Paradip will naturally be higher than other sites. But given the domestic growth, as we have reiterated earlier, our feeling is that this capacity will be required to meet the domestic growth which we are seeing today. If you're looking at a number of 230 million tons by the end of this decade and going beyond thereafter, unless capacities are put in place, I think India will not be able to meet this demand. I also mentioned a line, I think we believe that capacities are going to follow demand and there will be a lag in the medium term up to 2030. Any capacity which you set up today takes 4 to 5 years minimum. So when you start a project, keep that in mind. But we are quite confident that with our faster pace of execution and low specific investment cost, we are well placed to grow in India, and we are quite optimistic that this is in line with the growth and not in excess of the growth.
Got it. Last data question.
Okay. I request you to join back the queue, please, as we have participants waiting for their turn. Thank you. Next question is from the line of Sumangal Nevatia from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening and thanks for the opportunity. My first question is with respect to a JV with POSCO. Just want to understand better what is the rationale and what value does the new JV partner brings, given that we already have a very strong balance sheet after the JFE deal. And we also have a lot of access to expertise in value-added products, etc., given our association with JFE. So, Just some color on this. Thanks.
So there are two reasons. One is that both JFE and POSCO are leading global steel companies and both have their strengths on technology. There are certain strengths for which JFE, we have been able to get along with JFE into India, CRGO being one of them, and we have collaborated with them on many areas of improvements and will continue to do so. POSCO also has their own areas of technology, and especially in the high-strength steels, giga steels, which would go for lightweighting, replacement of aluminium, hydrogen technology to reduce emissions, digitalization and AI. I think those are areas of cooperation between POSCO and us. In addition to that, POSCO has a 2 million ton cold rolling facility in Maharashtra, and they would like to integrate backwards with a steel plant. And one of their criterias for looking for a steel plant in India has been to have a backward integration of the steel from their own facility. So these are the two reasons.
That is largely because for commercial, they wanted to have a localization of sourcing. And that is one of the primary reasons even POSCO wanted to come to India.
Yeah. So going forward, they want to buy, rather than sending it from Korea, they want to buy more steel from the local facility in India.
Understood. And just to harp on this topic a bit more, one is, I mean, how does the existing JV partners view association with new global players? Is there a potential conflict in future? And I mean, few years down the line, we have three large plants supplying flat steel from Odisha. So will we have a different sales strategy, different targeted downstream products across the plants, or they will just compete like independent plants?
No, we do not foresee any conflict between the JV partners per se. They will have their own strategies for sure, because they will be different legal entities. But we see, as we mentioned, the growth of India is strong, and therefore will enable all the entities to grow. And POSCO Maharashtra, as I mentioned, is a 2 million ton basically a captive demand for the POSCO facility which will come up. So keep that in mind as well. So that will be supplying basically one third of their total new capacity to the downstream facility.
Got it. The second question is, can I go for a second question?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, on a broader level, just want to understand, given the overall macro issues in the country and the pressure on inflation, do we see any risk of some withdrawal of protection, given our domestic prices are enjoying 20% kind of higher prices due to the protection? Just some thoughts here, sir.
Well, I think if you really look at protection, I would say India is probably one of the more balanced countries with respect to protection as you see it worldwide today. We are seeing protections between 25 to 50% in various parts of the world. Every country is trying to safeguard their shores from any kind of trade flows which can be adverse for that country, and that is becoming very critical to the supply chain resilience of that country. In India, with a 11.5% safeguard duty, I think we are far lower than what the rest of the world is. That's number one. Number two, your comparison is with the lows of December. I would not do that. 3 years back, in April 23, we had the same price as we had in April 26. The cost environment was similar if you were to look at coal and iron ore. But on top of that, the depreciation of the rupee has been severe. So please look at the fact that your cost on account of the overall ecosystem has gone up. You have just come back to where you were 3 years back. I would say this more of a price correction and to make it a viable price system today. From international price perspective also, I think we are now well balanced.
Yeah.
We do not think that we are very much off the international prices as we see today. If you look at, if by and large the Western economies, if you were to look at Europe and U.S., Europe is already in the range of $830 of hot rolled coil, and I think U.S. is close to $1,100 per metric ton of hot rolled coils. And Japan also and Korea also, internal prices are higher. So we are, price point of view also, more balanced in India.
Thank you. That's very useful. Thanks and all the best. Yeah.
Next question is from the line of Pinakin from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much, sir. My first question is, if we look at the CapEx guidance of 126,000 crores over the next 4 to 5 years, That clearly does not capture the entire 30 million ton JSW Steel expansion and the 10.5 million ton at the JV. So if you take a step back, can you give us a broad range of the capex over the next 5-6 years to go from the current capacity base to 78.5 million ton capacity base and includes downstream mining, everything?
So currently, as we have given you the capacity expansion plans, our capex plans are at 126,000 crores as of now. Incrementally to be at 62 million plus invest for equity for the joint venture and our mining, other investments, downstream facilities, our sense is that we would require another 100,000 crores between now to FY33, because FY32 if we try to plan a capacity, the payment would spill over at least to the next year. So you have about 6 to 7 years in which you would spread this capex.
So, sir, just to understand clearly, this 126 plus another 1 lakh crores, so 2 lakh 26,000 crores over the next, let's assume 6 to 7 years, right? FY27 is at 22,000 crores. So the way we should look at it, that in the coming years, the annual run rate of the capex will go from the 20s to the 30s, 35,000 crore a year in the next couple of years as the projects, the multiple projects pick up pace.
Yes, as if this is including the joint venture projects, including the mining, which we would, you know, additions which we would do in Mozambique, including our own 62 million tons. It's a combination of all of them. Yes.
Got it. And so my second question is, if I look at the guidance, right, if I strip away BPSL from this year's base, it implies roughly 9.5% of production growth in FY27. Given the timelines of the project commissionings that we have in terms of Dolvi, Vijayanagar, is it fair to say that this is the broad 8 to 10% CAGR that we can look at for the next 3 to 4 years?
If you see the guidance which we have given, if I recall, we have given a guidance of 29.75 million ton, which on a like-to-like basis is a 13% growth in production, and a guidance of sales at 28.6 million tons is a 10% growth. Now, going forward, the capacities, as you know, we are getting in capacities of Vijayanagar and Dolvi put together, which would add about 7 million tons of capacity between now to September 27. The Utkal facilities, which have been taken up, and the Vijayanagar facilities for expansion of another 10 million tons, etc., which has been taken up, would be there by FY30. Those will provide, each of them will provide incremental EBITDAs for the next phase of growth.
Got it. This is very helpful. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Pallav Agarwal from Antique Stock Broking. Please go ahead. Pallav, your line is unmuted. Please go ahead with your question.
Yeah, good evening, sir. Am I audible now?
Yes.
Yeah, so first question was on DM Ispat. So, I think, can you just share what was the actual production and, EBITDA number in FY25 for this company?
I think we'll request our investor, team. You can reach out to them and take the details. I don't have it off the cuff right now.
Sure, sir. Because I think.
But it's a facility of 0.9 million ton. Just to give you an overview, so 0.9 million ton. So you can roughly producing in the range of, I would say we would produce in the range of 0.8 million ton in this financial year.
Sure, sir. And also, if I look at the net worth, I think probably it was about 2,700 crores as per the press release on the stock exchange. So, and we've acquired it for about 6,500 crores. So that's close to almost three times, on a price to book basis. So. So, is this factoring in the future expansion that can happen with it?
No, so the current price at which this is acquired represents multiple approaches, discounted cash flow as well as replacement cost. It's roughly a million ton plant. Also the fact that it has a blast furnace which is very new, which was commissioned only last year. And if you take a normative EBITDA per ton of plant of this size, you will realize that the effective EV EBITDA is significantly attractive. Plus, the fact that this has potential to expand capacity almost double from here in fairly short period of time. All of these factors, but the valuation we believe is fairly attractive. Plus, the synergy with our Vijayanagar location, which is very close to it.
Yeah, on an expanded basis, you're right that you know, this gives us the additional headroom because we feel the next 1 million or 0.9 million ton can be expanded between 1600 to 1800 crores, making the overall investment very attractive.
Sure,
sir.
Thank you. Pallav, I request you to join back the queue, please. Thank you. Next question is from the line of Parthiv Jonsa from Anand Rathi. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on completing the JV and further strengthening the relationship with the partner. I have two questions. The first question is pertaining to the steel prices, considering, you know, just a couple of days back or very recently, you know, a couple of companies from Vietnam, China have taken substantial price hike, and also, you know, your price in Europe and USA are at a reasonably high level. Just wanted to check if you can just give a number of what can we expect as far as your price increase in quarter one and say H1 going forward.
So in the month of April, we have increased prices and we have increased some price for flat products in the month of May as well. I think we increased 2,000 in April and 1,000 in May for flat. Our belief is that for now the price will be range bound. We will watch the geopolitical situation, you know, in the country, and then take a view. As of now, we believe this would be range bound going into this quarter.
And so, just continuing to that question, any contracts from auto which would be done at a much higher prices, because I believe it's at a rolling basis, right?
Yeah, it would. So auto gets recalibrated quarterly, so the price increase for automotive will come in this quarter. The quarterly prices will get recalibrated, those will be also in this quarter, you're right.
Okay, and any idea on the hike which we can expect from the price from the auto sector?
I will not be able to give you numbers here, but you know, as we close the things, it will come out in terms of...
No problem. And my second question is pertaining to the... your annualized capex run rate of about 30,000-35,000 odd crores going forward, right? I believe though you are very comfortable for say 27, considering you would be your production and sales are at about 10-13% higher on a like-to-like basis, and also the prices are good. However, going forward, at say 35,000 crores of capex on annualized basis, would you start opting for more debt, because for in the near term, I think your cash flows might not match. If I'm not mistaken.
This is Swayam here. If you factor in the capacity, incremental capacity, which are going to be available fully from now till next 1.5 years, and that includes JVML, which is not at full capacity yet in FY26, can do 1 million more. BF3, which is going to start production once the capacity upgradation is completed, that will give 2 million more. And Dolvi Phase 3, which we expect to come in CY27. Now, these three put together creates almost 8 million tons of extra production, which will create anywhere between, you know, 9 to 12,000 crore of EBITDA, which is not in my base today. So if you take that out, you'll realize that even if as a company we stretch to 30 to 35,000 crore of capex spend, a part of it is going to get funded with a new cash I will generate. So if you exclude that, you'll realize that it's from the base, the kind of cash we are creating, we are not going to create very large stress to increase debt. But of course, temporarily, debt could still go up. But given where we stand right now, which is at 1.8 net debt to EBITDA, and our expectation is this leverage in FY 2027 perhaps will go slightly better, especially after second tranche of JV. We think we'll be very comfortable.
So my basic, my understanding was for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Yeah. And just my quick understanding was that Dolvi is expected in CY 2027. So the incremental benefit would be only from 2029 onwards, right? So I think for 2028 and 2029, that is what I wanted to understand. So these 2 years, there would be some increase in debt, right? If I'm not mistaken.
No, not really, because you will have JVML, which will start, which will actually produce entire 5 million in FY 2027. Then you will have BF3, which will have some positive uptick in FY 2027, not fully. That would come in FY 2028. And in FY 2028, you will also see Dolvi's part volume. Could be small. So this combined will create incremental cash, which we are not seeing in our base yet.
Without Dolvi, just to sum up, it's 4 million tons at least you will see between now to FY 2027, including the BMM volume. That will give you additional cash flow till Dolvi comes in. Dolvi will start kicking in, let's say, after, let's say, October 27 to December 27 quarter. They will start, let's say, operations and then ramp up capacity.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the line of Shubham Jain from Nippon India Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, sir. Good evening. Congratulations for the good performance. My first question is, can you help us understand the current raw material consumption norms from the Indian operations, specifically for iron ore and coking coal for per ton of steel? And also, within your cost of goods sold, roughly what percentage is attributable to iron ore, coking coal?
Well, percentage utilization or ratio of utilization of iron ore and coking coal is purely depending upon what grade of iron ore we are using and which location and which technology we are using into. So typically, if I have to say, then it is about 1.8-1.9 per ton of steel is what the iron ore consumption would be. And coking coal, if I have to consider purely coking coal, just is about 0.7 kgs per ton of steel. It is a typical ratio what we have, only coking coal. But if I have to add all the coals, it becomes about 950 kgs depending upon the process what we are getting into.
Okay. And roughly what percentage is attributable to iron ore and coking coal in COGS?
Well, it keeps changing depending on because both are cyclical in nature. But then I would say only about 60% put together is the cost share of iron ore and coking coal.
Okay, sir. And I have one more question.
Shubham, I request you to join back the queue, please, as we have participants waiting for their turn. Thank you. Next question is from the line of Indrajit Agarwal from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. My first question is on the export. As you said, that more and more global economies are getting closed. So if at a point in the next couple of years, we have a temporary overcapacity in flat steel in India, which geographies do you think we can still have a market?
Actually, if I really we have modeled the overall flat demand in India. By and large, if you see, flat has been growing at a slightly faster pace in general over the past few years. So we see that flat demand will increase. The entry barriers for flat capacity setting up is more. Therefore, in the medium term, maybe between the years of 2028-2030, I see that supply will lag demand. Going forward, if you really look at the overall thumb rule number, if we are incrementally generating about 12-14 million tons of incremental demand, roughly about 6-7 million tons of flat steel would be the incremental demand. That means you will require to set up at least two hot strip mills, because each hot strip mill takes almost 2 years to fully play out. So at least two hot strip mills should come every year for you to be able to meet that demand. I do not foresee too much of a problem in the planning which we see. There could be some year, as you mentioned, where if there is any clubbing of capacities which come, then certain amount would be exported, which is fine. As I mentioned, our Orissa facility is on the port, and that can leverage exports into the world. We also have opportunities of supplying some green steel to the world. As you know, we have said that Salav would produce low-grade emission steel from natural gas and DRI and renewable energy. That is a natural export model. The third one is that we see that there is a gap in slabs also, which is required internationally. The traded slabs internationally has come down post the Russia, Ukraine, and Iran conflicts. There is a space which has been created in that. That's the third opportunity for exports which is there.
Sure. My second question is actually a bookkeeping question. If you can highlight how much is the iron ore cost increase for 1Q, and what is the tax incidence of the BPSL deal?
The iron ore costs have gone up in the last few weeks. We are trying to reduce, and we are trying to do the blending in a manner so that the specific consumption is better. And with that, we will try to moderate the impact of the price increase. It will be slightly higher, but not much from quarter four to quarter one. As far as the bookkeeping question is concerned on the BPSL tax, something which you asked, you wanted to, can you repeat that part? Tax incidence
yeah.
on
is
the BPSL.
Is there any tax implication? Yeah.
No, so BPSL has had carry forward losses, unabsorbed depreciation. So the effective tax on this transaction is significantly lower. Those losses were fully utilized.
Even on JSW books?
Correct, on JSW books.
All right. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll move on to our next question from the line of Ashish Jain from Macquarie India. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. So good evening. So my first question is, you know, on pricing, you know, you made a point earlier that, you know, current prices are still where we were in 2023. But then if I see that in context of, you know, China exports, assuming that China exports drive prices directionally, they were much lower in 2023. So how should we think about pricing going ahead? Have we come to a point where, you know, pricing is more local, you know, irrespective of the safeguard duty? Have we come to that point yet, do you think?
No. I don't think price will always be what is internationally available, and that has to be taken into account. I don't think you can ignore that. But just to give you a number, because we were just going into this as an analysis from our side, China prices, you know, in the international market in let's say April, May, was in the range of, you know, $550, $560 FOB. It was actually slightly higher than what it is today. Today, it's, let's say, in the range of $510 FOB. And on the cost side also, you will see similar structures. India, at that point of time, hot roll coil prices were in the range of 60,000 rupees. You can do your maths. I think we are not very far from this basket. That's why I compared April 23 to April 26. But international prices will always be a guiding factor for the domestic steel prices.
Right. So secondly, you know, in terms of the demand, you clearly are very positive in demand. Is it possible to, you know, give some color in terms of which are the key sectors, segments where we are most optimistic on demand? If you can, you know, give some granular color of that.
So, you know, the way infrastructure and construction naturally contributes to a very large part of the overall steel consumption, and that's growing at a very healthy rate. automotive, if you see from what was expected when we began this year to what we ended this year, automotive growth has been really good. Automotive capacity announcements by major auto producers in the country is also a very healthy number. You know, we are seeing a similar kind of traction in the renewable energy sector, and similarly in you know, appliances and others. So I would, if you were to sum up, infrastructure, manufacturing including automotive, renewable energy, these are moving at a fast pace.
Thank you. Anything on railways?
Ashish, I request you to join back the queue, please, as we have participants waiting for their turn. Thank you. Next question is from the line of Rashi from Citi. Please go ahead.
This is a question. You mentioned that the cost increase sequentially is expected to be about 3,000 rupees. So apart from coking coal, where all are you expecting the increase?
Yeah, coking coal, our expectation is between $12 to $15.
So the large part of the increase would be somewhere around the exchange rate is for sure one of the cost element. And the sea freight has gone because there's a large part is seaborne trade also for us, whether it's the import of coking coal or other coal or coastal movement. So that impacts. So and the fluxes, because the Middle East is one region where all the fluxes are coming. So that gets impacted and the damage incidences are increasing there. So gas would be very, our exposure to gas is just about 5 to 6% of the total production volume. So it won't impact much to us, but still in the civil, we generally get impacted because of the gas prices.
And on account of iron ore, maybe we factor 5% quarter four to quarter one on cost.
And when you say the exposure to gas is 5 to 6%, because my understanding was that the gas impacted mostly your downstream production. Is there any upstream exposure as well?
No.
Dolvi, our you're talking about natural gas exposure, right?
Yes.
Natural gas exposure, when you natural gas exposure to downstream is not there. Natural gas is basically used in Dolvi in our operations to some extent, but as Arun explained, it's a very small percentage of our overall requirement. Downstream uses a little bit of LPG. But we have been converting to different fuels, and therefore, we are able to mitigate some part of the impact of the LPG pricing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We are using liquefied natural gas.
Understood.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Ritvik Sheth from One Up Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good evening, sir. So a couple of questions. So what will be the share of our JV investments in this 2.5 lakh crore?
For the JV investment, first of all, the as I said, 126,000 crores plus at the most another 100,000 crores. It could be a little lower, but at the most another 100,000 crores. The JV investment will only be in form of equity. And so if you typically take a project which we are doing, let's say we are doing BF6, for example, right now in Vijayanagar, which for which the expansion which we have just announced is 26,000 crores. If you were to take that as a benchmark between 25 to 30,000 crores, equity would be for any project of this would be about 8 to 10,000 crores. So in a project like this, our share of the equity would be close to 4 to 5,000 crores. In each of these projects. So that means two projects multiply by two.
Got it. And so what is the outlook for the overseas subsidiaries for FY27?
US operations have, the vacuum degassing modification and our caster modification for dynamic soft reduction has taken place. They are in the process of stabilizing. That will enable them to produce higher grades. So one that is value accretive. The volume also, which we lost on account of the shutdown at Ohio upgradation, that will come back. Baytown upgradation is getting completed and that should start operations in quarter two of this financial year, by the end of quarter two of this financial year. and gradually ramp up. So that these two combined will give you a better profitability going forward in the US operation. Italy also, the sales volumes are likely to be better.
Yeah. What else? Sales volume will be better, and the product mix and the market mix is looks to be much better this year. So we would get a better overall EBITDA financial performance over there.
So overall, both assets will show better performance vis-a-vis FY26.
Okay. Got it. And all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Jashandeep Singh Chadha from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity and congratulations, for a good set of numbers. So my first question is in line with, one of, participants I've earlier asked. So just wanted to put the net debt again into context. So asking in another way, sir, in the near term and in the sustainable, how do JSW still look at its leverage? How much is management targeting the net debt to EBITDA in the near term and also sustainably? So just wanted to understand the peak debt and, sustainable debt, what will be?
I think when Jayant, in his opening speech, did mention it, we have revised our upper limit headroom from 3.75 down to 3 net debt to EBITDA. And that basically means we are much more comfortable even while we are in this capex journey. Instead of giving an absolute net debt number, our preference will be to track the leverage ratios.
We are, as I said, we are hopeful of a lower net debt to EBITDA numbers. Therefore, we have revised our cap and we are comfortable below 2.5.
Yes.
Understood, sir. And sir, my next question is a little structural in nature. I just wanted to understand when we look at your JV expansion plans, JSW, expansion plans for the next decade. Also, we see that largely blast furnace will govern the expansion phase, right? Although scrap is EAF on a smaller term you are putting in. So, how far is India actually investing in scrap-based EAF or EAF, as such? So how will blast furnace keep on dictating the expansion in the near decades as well?
So even in our today's mix, if I were to see, I think about more than maybe close to 1/3 or 30% plus is electric arc furnace based. Going forward, we have mentioned that we would be putting up a facility in Salau of 4 million tons for green steel, which will be against DRI and scrap-based. We are also now, adding scrap processing facilities, and in the country, we are beginning with West, then we will add one more in South, which have already, we have already started creating a supply chain for scrap buying, and that's improving every year. So we are increasing scrap collection and putting it back into our furnaces. So that will further, even in the converters, if you do that, will further bring down your overall emissions. But having said that, we must be conscious of the fact that India doesn't have too much of scrap generation as we speak. It will take time for India to generate scrap on its own. Scrap availability from Europe or from US may go down with their own focus on scrap-based production. The cost of steel or the cost of the technologies are also higher. For now, the best technology for India is blast furnace-based and using various technologies to reduce the emissions from the blast furnace-based steelmaking.
Fuel consumption.
Fuel consumption, circulating gases back, using recovery gases and putting it back into the blast furnaces to reduce your met coal. All those dehumidifier, various technologies are being used to reduce the emissions from the blast furnaces. That combination with the grade of iron ore we have makes better sense.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question is from the line of Rahul Gupta from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. So industry grew by industry demand grew by 8% in fiscal 26, while you grew by 12%. And if I adjust numbers for BPSL and BMM, you are guiding for again 12% growth for fiscal 27. Does that mean that you remain confident that the industry would grow at around 8%? That is number one. And one related question I have is your capacity expansion guidance is at around 12% CAGR through the years. So does that mean that you would continue to grow at around 1.5 times of the industry continuously for the next few years? Thank you so much.
Yeah, I think, you know, we all of us agree that, you know, India would be growing close to about 7% of GDP, and the elasticity for steel growth is close to 1.3 times to the GDP. And we have seen this in the past several years. Our guidance is about 8 to 9% or 7 to 9% would be the growth in the steel market in the coming year. And the way India is growing, the way India is likely to be, we have no doubt that it would be growing close to about 8 to 9% of the steel side. Now, this is the overall steel, out of which flat steel is part of it, and we are largely getting to the flat steel. And we have no doubt that about 10 to 12% of market sales growth for JSW would be a challenge on those lines. So we are quite confident on that.
So our growth for sales for this year is about 10%. Excluding
so, Jayant sir, if I adjust BPSL from the base and BMM from fiscal 27, that implies around 12% growth, right?
No, the way we have given our guidance, it's excluding BPSL and including BMM volume.
Please right, exactly. That. So if I adjust BPSL from fiscal 26 base as well, your growth would be more like 12%, right?
That's right.
It would be adjusted growth from BPSL, if you net up, according to me, it's about 10%. But you can, our investor, sales is 10% and production is 13%.
Yeah.
But they can clarify that to you if there is any doubt.
We can reconcile that offline now.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll take that as the last question for today. I now hand the conference over to management for closing comments. Over to you.
So thank you, operator. Just one clarification I would like to make. This is Ashwin Bajaj. We've got some queries, you know. So regarding the accounting impact of BPSL, we have a slide, page number 5 in the presentation. Kindly refer to that. BPSL has been deconsolidated at March end, and the numbers for BPSL will not be part of financials of the EBITDA. It would be equity accounting, and there is a line in the P&L which says income from associates and joint ventures. So that's where BPSL financials would sit. So over to Mr. Acharya for any closing comments.
I think as we highlighted, we had a transformational year. Our operational performance has been strong. Our balance sheet is much stronger, and we have deleveraged, making the foundation for the next phase of growth. We have targeted 62 million tons in India by FY32, in addition to the joint ventures, which would cumulatively add 16 million tons. We believe that India-centric growth, India is in a very long-time growth story for a decade or two, and we would be able to support that growth in the industrial ecosystem in India. Thank you very much. If you have any other questions, please reach back to the investor. Thank you.
Thank you, members of the management team. On behalf of JSW Steel Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.